Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Can we begin our show this morning with a little bit of a thought experiment? I want you to think back to last year for a moment, the 2019 season. Simple question. Who was Georgia's best defensive player? Now, listen, in any kind of question like this, certain people have certain, I guess, favorites, guys they want to mention. But if you want to just base it on the most decorated player for Georgia, that was the first team AP All-American J.R. Reed. I think it's a fairly strong case to make that J.R. Reed was Georgia's best defensive player last year. How about the year before that in 2018? Once again, you can kind of make a case for a few guys. DeAndre Walker, for instance, was a very impactful player when healthy, but DeAndre Baker became a first-round pick. DeAndre Baker was the Thorpe Award winner for the nation's best defensive back. Hard to have a better year than that. I'm going to make a case that DeAndre Baker was Georgia's best defensive player in 2018. How about in 2017? This is the easiest one, right? If I ask you who was Georgia's best defensive player in 2017, you're immediately going to say Roquan Smith, because not only was Smith Georgia's best defensive player that year, he had really one of the best single seasons in UGA history, maybe for anybody on either side of the ball. Roquan Smith was that good in 2017. Very easy answer to the question. Okay, how about Kirby's first year? Now, this seems like a long time ago now, 2016. A lot of us have a hard time even remembering what we had for lunch yesterday. Can you think all the way back to 2016? Roquan Smith was on that team, but he wasn't yet the player that he would become in 2017. Georgia's defensive MVP was actually Maurice Smith, the defensive back graduate transfer who came in from Alabama. So keep this in mind here for a moment. 4 years of Kirby Smart defenses. In three of those 4 years, I think you can make a pretty strong case that the best player on the Georgia defense was a defensive back. You with me so far on this? Let's fast forward now to 2020. I think one of the things that's really, really interesting is the growing hype around this Georgia defense for what it might be able to do this upcoming season. Let me give you a little bit of a taste of that. Let me go back to last Wednesday's edition of Dog Nation Daily when we had Mike Griffith on the show. Mike, of course, covers the team for DogNation.com, and he made what has been, I think, a pretty interesting capitalization of a series of bold statements about the Georgia defense just to kind of set us up for where we want to go next. Let me let you hear a little bit of Mike from last Wednesday.
This Georgia defense, to bring back 9 of 11 starters off a defense that finished the year number one in the nation in scoring defense, number one in the nation in rush defense, number 3 in total defense, number 8 in pass, I haven't seen a returning defense this good in the nation in quite some time.
So listen, that's an interesting opinion from Mike, and obviously he's provocative when he shares his opinions. And when it comes to the Georgia defense this year, that may very well turn out to be true. Wow, it really was as good in the season as it looked to be on paper. It may indeed play itself out that exact same way. I guess, to be completely honest, though, I'm a little bit allergic to that kind of hype right now, because I think it's probably fair to say that if we go back to this time a year ago, that these kinds of things, I haven't seen an offensive line on paper like this in 100 years of college football. You know, that's just the kind of thing that you think we probably would have heard. You think we probably would have said. And no disrespect to the Georgia offensive line, they had a good year, but in terms of being even best offensive line in the country, they'd never even approached that discussion by the end of the season. I'm not banging on those guys, not criticizing them, but the hype that we had for the Georgia offensive line going into last season kind of turned out to be a little bit false. And when it comes to the Georgia defense this year, I don't want the same thing to be true. Now, obviously, there's a chance that there's nothing to be concerned about, nothing to be worried about. This Georgia defense really will go out there and play just that way in the upcoming season. Although it is fair to say, at the end of the year, when that Georgia defense that statistically had been so good during the season faced an elite offense, LSU in the SEC championship, at least for that particular game, the Georgia defense didn't necessarily pass that test. And it's important to note that when Georgia guys have talked about their performance against LSU, one of the things they're not doing is kind of resting on their laurels and leaning on their the statistical excellence in all the other games. They don't point to the win against Florida, the win against Auburn, or anything team like that. No, I think what you hear is a little bit of saltiness to kind of go out maybe in 2020, at least the guys who are coming back, to go out in 2020 and prove that what they showed against LSU is not the real Georgia defense. That what the real Georgia defense is going to be this upcoming season is something altogether nastier than that, altogether a little meaner than that, altogether more capable of shutting down elite offenses. Not just feasting on meager quarterbacks, but actually going out there and doing it to good offenses as well. Let me give you an example of that from Monty Rice. Georgia linebacker, one of the key leaders for this team in 2020. And when I had a chance to talk to him about the LSU game after the Sugar Bowl, you know, you can tell in Rice's voice that he's pretty salty and he wants to shut up some critics who maybe think the Georgia defense may have gotten exposed during that game. Here's Monty Rice from after the Sugar Bowl.
I don't really listen to what people got to say because at the end of the day, they're not the one going out there practicing. They're not the one with two casts on their hand with injuries, you know, sprained wrist. It's not, you know, they're not out there banging with us. They just talking. So, I mean, they can talk all they want. I mean, that LSU team is, you know, a great team. They're on the road. You know, Joe Burrow and them, they hot. You know, yeah, they just put up almost 100 on Oklahoma. You know, they just, you know, it's just they years.
So let me see if I can kind of tie all this together for right now, and then let me take this conversation one step further. So you've got a situation where there are some in the media saying, this Georgia defense is going to be the best in the entire country. You've also got a game at the end of the 2019 season where maybe there were some questions that kind of emerged about, well, just how good is this Georgia defense really when it plays an elite offense? Just how good is it in a game like that? When it's not facing freshman quarterback like Bo Nix or guy who couldn't start for his high school team, Kyle Trask, or whatever. How good is that Georgia defense there in those moments? And honestly, I think that's probably a little bit of a fair question as we head towards this upcoming season. Now, let me also tie that back into what I started the program with. I think it's really interesting that as we head towards this upcoming year, we see once again on paper anyway, where the expectation for this Georgia defense, with all the accolades it's going to collect along the way, the expectation for this Georgia defense is for once again a defensive back to be this unit's best player. The same way that it was in 2016 when it was Maurice Smith, and in 2018 when it was DeAndre Baker, and 2019 when it was J.R. Reed. Once again, we see the early indications that this group will be led by a defensive back once again. In fact, not too long ago, ESPN put out its way too early All-American list. Guys that could be All-Americans for this upcoming season. It was great for Georgia fans to see Richard LeCount mentioned there. LeCount was bragged on by Chris Lowe in the piece. Let me read you a couple sentences here. Lowe saying that LeCount's versatility and experience are big reasons Georgia should be plenty salty on defense in 2020. And his decision to return for a senior season was huge for that dog secondary. That's Chris Lowe from ESPN on Richard LeCount as a possible All-American. Now, let me say this really clearly. I think that Chris Lowe, everything he says here is absolutely correct, and I think it's great news for Georgia that a guy like Richard LeCount coming back for his senior year is being touted as a possible All-American. Versatility, I think LeCount does have that. Leadership, I think he has that. The kind of athleticism to get some NFL attention even this year, absolutely that was the case. And maybe even more attention by coming back and having a great senior season. However, let's think about LeCount for a moment in light of the question I think that hangs over all of this. How is it that the Georgia defense will truly live up to the hype this year? How is it that the Georgia defense will be, as Mike Griffith suggested, it could be the very best in the country? And how does this defense maintain that standard, maintain that reputation, even when it plays elite offenses like the one that LSU had at the end of the 2019 season? Your answer may be different than mine, but I've got the microphone, so I'll give you my opinion on this right now. My simple wish for the Georgia defense for this upcoming year is for someone other than a defensive back to be this unit's best player. And that's no disrespect to Richard LeCount. I think it would be a great thing if he became an All-American. Obviously, it goes without saying that having an All-American safety is a really good thing to have. But you know what would be even better than that? For an All-American to emerge at a spot a little closer to the football. What if it was an All-American linebacker like it was for Georgia in 2017 when it was Roquan Smith as the Butkus Award winner? What were the results that season? Georgia also very stingy to the tune of a college football playoff. And in the second half against Oklahoma, with its back to the wall against a Rose Bowl, against an elite offense like Baker Mayfield and the Sooners had, the Georgia defense absolutely found a way to get it done, and Roquan Smith was a big part of that. So if you want to talk about the Georgia defense living up to the hype this upcoming season, being as good as it can be, fulfilling the expectations that so many people are going to have for it this offseason, I think you have to look at positions beyond the secondary. I think you have to look at guys beyond Richard LeCount. Him playing an All-American level would be fantastic. But what might be even better than that is for an All-American linebacker to emerge, an All-American edge rusher to emerge, an All-American type defensive lineman to emerge. If you're talking about a Georgia defense that really is the nation's best, those are the positions that may matter more. It was true for Georgia in 2017, and that recipe may also be true for Georgia in 2020 as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's great to have you with us. Video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, every day at 10, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and a podcast whenever you want to listen to it. Pretty much wherever you can find podcasts, including me, posting the show each and every day to the worldfamousdognation.com. By the way, it's a great chance to kind of check in on the show page there at dognation.com, because we'll kind of put some show notes. A lot of the material that I reference when I do the show, we'll do links to that and things like that at dognation.com. So it's actually kind of a cool thing to check out when you see that there. Fun guest for us here coming up in just a moment. Connor Riley going to be with us. We'll talk to Connor about a lot of these subjects and a whole lot more. Before that, though, let me remind you, as I said before, we are brought today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. This is a company that knows how to fix your foundation issues, your waterproofing issues, those kinds of things that you might be dealing with. They have the ability to do it for you. And if it's a simple thing, they're going to just tell you how to go do it, like a downspout, for instance. I'm not even sure what a downspout is, but ESOG knows it, and they'll go tell you how to buy one if that's what you need to fix your problem. But sometimes these kinds of issues, foundation, waterproofing, things like that, can be a lot more substantial. In that case, Engineered Solutions of Georgia is also the ones you want to trust, because they have two full-time engineers on staff. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. And the best news is they are really easy to get in touch with. Their phone number could not be more easy to memorize. Just simply call 678-ESOG now. That's right. Dial 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Before we get Connor Riley on the program today, let me go around the doghouse here for a moment. And I want to look at the Georgia offense for a second, because we looked at the defense there to start the program. I want to look at the offense now for a moment, and I want to use ESPN once again as kind of our way of kind of getting into this, because one of the things we'll end up doing a good bit on the show today, I do really enjoy ESPN's offseason content. I think they do a good job of sort of setting the narrative for how we'll discuss not just UGA, but a lot of these teams around college football for the upcoming season. And one of the things they address right now is the big question facing all of their, what they call, way too early top 25 teams, Georgia coming in at number six on that list. And the question for Georgia, the big one this upcoming season, by now ought to be quite familiar to all of us. It does involve the Georgia offense. Now, I'm going to say again what I've said before. I think ESPN pushing this on Georgia, even though it has a little bit of a negative edge to it, I think is a really good thing in the hope that the Georgia offense gets the best possible results this upcoming season. Let me read what Alex Scarborough writes here, and we'll see if you agree with me on this. Here's the big question as explained by Scarborough from ESPN. He says Jake Fromm couldn't drag the Georgia offense out of the dark ages. Listen to that imagery. Come to think of it, neither could true freshman Justin Fields 2 years ago, but maybe Jamie Newman will do the trick. The Wake Forest transfer is the kind of dual-threat quarterback who might finally force Kirby Smart and his coaching staff to take a second look at transitioning to more wide-open spread concepts. As with LSU a year ago, there's a sense that more modern offense could be the key to unlocking Georgia's full potential. But as with LSU, in the long slog before Joe Brady's arrival, no one is sure that change will actually happen. That's Alex Scarborough from ESPN.com on the big question facing the Georgia offense. Now, there's really three kind of negative themes that kind of pop up here. All of them, I think, are really interesting. The idea that the Georgia offense needs to be dragged out of the dark ages. Scarborough kind of writes that. That Kirby Smart needs to be forced to make changes. That even with that, no one's really sure that those changes will actually take place. I've said before, when you look at the issues that the Georgia offense faced last season, for me, it's all coming down to the coaches. Jake Fromm was not quite as good as many of us expected to be. I blame the coaches for not giving him a better game plan. The Georgia wide receivers, the subject of a lot of discussion and debate. Obviously, that group could have been better. I, for the most part, blame the coaches for not making them better, because let's face it, the coaches in this case, Kirby Smart and his chief lieutenants, it was James Coley a year ago, they're the ones making millions of dollars. It's their job to get the most out of the talent that's on campus. And no one, for the most part, has out-recruited UGA, which puts even more pressure on the coaches to kind of go out there and get that done. And the fact that ESPN continually now, and this is one of a series of articles that have kind of touched on a point like this. The fact that ESPN continues to highlight the ways in which the Georgia offense didn't get it done last year and continues to kind of lay that blame at the feet of the coaches, I think it's a really good thing for what we need to see from Georgia this year, which is an offense that's a lot more powerful. Now, it doesn't mean you have to pass the ball every single time. It doesn't mean you have to become what Oklahoma State has been or what Texas Tech has been or what Mike Leach is going to be doing at Mississippi State. Now, you don't have to do any of that kind of stuff, but you do have to pass the ball a little bit more. Or maybe, as Todd Monken, the new offensive coordinator, has explained, you need to pass with a purpose in mind. Here's what Monken said about that in the past.
Really, what I took away from it was being able to throw to win. That really, to me, was the air raid. You had a certain amount of run game, ran a lot of the same concepts, and you could throw to win. That was really it. Like any offense, it works a lot better if you have good players. That's really what it's about. It's about having good players and doing things the right way consistently so you do it better than they do it.
Listen, if you're not having fun with this offseason storyline, I don't know what to tell you. You've got a lot of folks around the country saying, ah, Kirby Smart can't evolve. He can't get with the times. And what does Smart do? Boldly, strongly, aggressively. Goes out and get an offensive coordinator from the NFL, a guy who's had success calling plays at the highest level, a guy who brings the philosophy of you got to throw to win at the big-time level of the sport. Not throw because you're losing or throw because you're desperate, but throw because you have an opportunity to put your throat on, or put your foot on the throat of the opponent. I think this is really, really fun, and I love the idea that the Georgia coaches are being challenged to change. I love the idea they're being pushed to evolve. I think Todd Monken's the representation of that evolution, and I can't wait to see how that's going to play out here in Athens. All right, it is Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Fun for us later on. I'm going to explain to you why I might have to give a little bit of my money over to Georgia Tech, something I don't love doing necessarily, but I might have to do in this case. We'll talk to you about that a little bit later on. For now, though, for a lot more on these big questions facing Georgia here this offseason, let's talk to our buddy Connor Riley.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So Connor Riley, good piece at DogNation.com this morning. Also kind of looking at some of those bigger questions facing UGA, a little deeper than maybe what you're going to get on the national website part of this. And we'll talk to Connor about a lot of those things that he had to say. Connor, let me start before we get there, though, on the kind of the 2 points that I just brought up. And I guess the offense, something we've kind of done now for a while. I continue to like the idea of the Georgia coaches being challenged. I love the idea that the national website here and the market leader, which is what ESPN is, the fact that they're not saying what was wrong with Jake Fromm in 2019 or what was wrong with the Georgia coaches, or should I say the Georgia wide receivers in 2019. They're saying the Georgia offense, the coaching philosophy needs to be dragged out of the offseason. I love the idea of putting the blame on the coaches for all of this, because I think what you see in football now is that coaching matters. And if the Georgia offense is going to be better this upcoming season, I think the challenge is on Todd Monken. The challenge is on Kirby Smart to kind of loosen the reins on his hire. But the challenge is on the coaches to kind of go out there and match wits with the best. Joe Brady's an example of that from LSU a year ago. I can't wait to see what it looks like here in Athens. How would you respond?
Well, I think you like that they're challenging coaching staff, because in just sort of the way you believe and think about football, you tend, like as you say, you know, to put more weight on the coaching. For example, we were talking about the Super Bowl the other day. BA likes to pin the blame on Kyle Shanahan. I choose to blame Jimmy Garoppolo, who was awful in the fourth quarter of that game. And even going back to our discussion last week, you know, is it Joe Brady or Joe Burrow who deserves sort of more of the credit for LSU? I do think that it to me anyway, it is kind of getting beaten down already in the sense that, you know, this is sort of the second week in a row where ESPN has sort of touted out the same line of, you know, Georgia's offense has been sort of stuck in the past, and, you know, it's going to be up to Todd Monken and Jamie Newman to bring it out. But I think really it's going to be more on what Jamie Newman is sort of able to do in this offense, because I think we both agree during the back half of last year, we think James Coley did a pretty decent job of at least designing up some plays and getting guys open. But at the end of the day, Georgia and Jake Fromm just weren't able to execute those plays.
On the other side of the ball, can the Georgia defense be the best in the country if a defensive back is its best player?
I think so. I mean, I think you saw, you know, for an example, in 2011, Tyrann Mathieu, I think some of those Alabama defenses when they were led by Minkah Fitzpatrick, if you have that type of defensive back who is, you know, making disruptive plays, interceptions, tackles for loss, etc., I do think there's a lot of value in that. I just think with Georgia, you know, I would agree J.R. Reed is Georgia's best defensive player last year, but the way Georgia uses their safeties, they wanted to just not give up big plays. And that is part of what safeties are supposed to do. But if that's the best thing that you do and you're not constantly forcing turnovers or making plays in the backfield, that does make things a little hard on your defense.
You know, if you want to go back and look last spring, we were just hit over the head all the time with the havoc rate, mm-hmm. the sacks, the tackles for loss, things like that. By the end of the season, no one around Athens was really talking that much about havoc rate anymore. My guess is that's not going to be as intense of a talking point this spring as it was a year ago for whatever reason. But I think that general theme still applies here, that if the Georgia defense really does live up to the hype that's out there for it, I think it has to be more impactful. And as much as interceptions can play into that, and they certainly can, I think the impact for that, generally speaking, comes closer to the football, doing some of the things that Roquan did in 2017. That could be N'Kobe Dean this year. It could be a year older Azeez Ojulari. Obviously, Nolan Smith will have a chance to do that. Trayvon Walker may literally become a household name by the way that he plays as a sophomore. But somebody from that group, or maybe some of the others that I should have mentioned and didn't, if this Georgia defense becomes more impactful, if they become more, you know, just among the nation's best, I think that's the kind of general look that you get from things like that. You're going to get something a little closer, someone a little closer to the ball, kind of exploding on the scene, much the same way that Roquan did back in 2017.
So, do you have a player who you think will be that best player?
I think it's someone from the quartet I just mentioned, and I don't necessarily know if there's one more likely than the rest. I mean, I think that the Roquan example shows you that you don't necessarily have to greatly foreshadow this from one year to the next. It'd be easy to say, oh, it's going to be Trayvon Walker because of the step that he took this year. But there's a chance that someone like N'Kobe could just sort of blossom and explode, because Roquan in 2016 had 95 tackles. That's a good season. But no one nationally is talking about a linebacker with 95 tackles. And yet, from the very early going in 2017, it was obvious that Roquan was one of the best players in the country. We could see someone like a N'Kobe or even a Nolan sort of like totally explode onto the scene without a ton of foreshadowing from the year before, because that's kind of how Roquan did it.
But you're not going to make a prediction.
I don't, beyond the four that I just mentioned, I don't know that one's more likely than the others.
Well, if Georgia is going to be the best defensive team in the country, Trayvon Walker needs to be the best defensive player on this team and probably in the country. And I think, you know, with his size, his athleticism, the things we saw from him this past year, I think there's a chance that could happen. Now, obviously, he's got a lot to do, but given the losses Georgia has on the defensive line, they saw five seniors graduate last year. They're going to be relying on a guy like Walker to play just a lot more, especially on those early downs. And if he's able to be disruptive, you know, more so even than Tyler Clark as both a run stopper and a pass rusher, I think that's really going to help Georgia's defense.
One of my favorite things to do is kind of imagine what opposing coaching staffs do to prepare for, in this case, Georgia. I've got to imagine, given the skill set of all the guys we just mentioned, they all have prodigious skill sets. The guy that you would conceivably think opposing coaches would spend the most time having to try to talk about would be Walker, because mm-hmm. it's size you've got to block, it's speed you've got to be able to account for. I got to imagine the most sleepless nights for, you know, would-be offensive coordinators, certainly offensive linemen given the task of blocking him. I've got to imagine, this is no disrespect to Nolan or Kobe or really anyone, but I've got to imagine that Trayvon Walker, because of that combination of size and athleticism, probably leads to more sleepless nights for the opposition than maybe anybody else in the Georgia defense, just in terms of how you account for it.
I think opposing special teams coaches lose sleep thinking about how they're going to try and block Trayvon Walker on kickoff teams.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely in the head of a lot of these teams because you saw a lot of extracurricular stuff mm-hmm. with him. I just think that, you know, 290 pounds, whatever he is, running as fast as he was, you know, straight down towards a kickoff, you always saw extra blocks after the fact, you know, guys trying to get extra physical with him. I just think he brings a sense of anxiety with him because of what a game wrecker he has the potential of being.
Yeah, and seeing him from the field level, and you don't always, you know, from watching from the TV or even the press box, you don't really get an appreciation of how big these guys are. Trayvon Walker's first-team All-American getting off the bus. His shoulders are huge. He does not look like a guy who weighs 290 pounds, but he moves people like he is 290 pounds. And if Georgia, you know, to be sort of the defense that potentially a lot of people think it can be, I think there's a difference between having, you know, a great defense and having a defense that matters. Georgia clearly had a great defense in 2019, but I think we saw against LSU – I don't really know if that Georgia defense really made a whole lot of difference in making life more difficult for LSU.
I want to ask you about Zamir White coming up. Let me also remind folks that this is a great time to check out the Marlowe's Tavern in your neighborhood. You know, I've been telling you about getting ready for Valentine's Day or something like that. And really, you don't have to make it be Valentine's. Really, any kind of date night or business lunch or anything like that. There's never a bad time for chef-inspired food. There's never a bad excuse to go sit down and enjoy a craft cocktail. You know, just Marlowe's Tavern, they're just known for unbelievable service. They roll out the red carpet. They take special care with the ingredients they use and all their drinks and all their, you know, menu items and everything else. It's just a really, really great meal experience. I love good food. You can look at me and tell that. Marlowe's Tavern is famous for that. They got some brand new menu stuff they're about to roll out. So please check out the one closest to you, Marlowe's Tavern. We're big fans of theirs here. And, of course, make sure you listen to the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb every Monday here on Dog Nation Daily. So, Connor, I mentioned before, you've got a good piece up at DogNation.com looking at your own collection of big questions involving UGA this upcoming season. I think it's interesting to note that pretty prominently in that article, and I hope folks will read it for themselves, pretty prominently in that article, you mentioned Zamir White. I think this is a very, very provocative question facing Georgia for this upcoming year. And so I'll kind of turn the tables on you. What do you know about Zamir right now? What are you certain about? What are you sure of? What are the expectations, the baseline that you feel like is fairly easy for White to match or eclipse this upcoming season?
So I did some digging through some stats. This will be the first time since the 2012 season, going into the 2012 season, that Georgia doesn't have a returning rusher who had at least 500 yards a season ago. I somehow think DeAndre Swift is now perhaps a little underrated or at least underappreciated for all that he did last year and sort of a lot of times, in my opinion, making something out of nothing. And replacing him is not just a, you know, snap easy kind of thing to do. I myself, a season ago, really hyped up Zamir White, and for a variety of reasons, he just was not the player a season ago that I thought he was going to be. But I think you saw, both at times and especially in that Sugar Bowl last year, sort of in a way like Derrick Henry, when he gets the ball more and sort of gets into the rhythm of the game, he just gets better as the game goes along. And I think, one, I mean, just knowing Zamir and sort of all he's been through long before he even got to college football, he's sort of been ready for this moment and waiting for this and sort of his opportunity. And, you know, he's going to have the first crack at it because Georgia, again, Swift is gone, Harrion is gone. James Cook, Kenny McIntosh have flashed at times, but they're just as much as question marks as White is, and I think he's really going to need to answer some questions about what this Georgia rushing game looks like next year.
Yeah, I think White's the most important back on this roster. I don't know that guarantees he'll be the best back on the roster, the leading rusher by the end of the season, but he's still the safest bet. Former number one back from the class of 2018, another year removed from knee injuries. If a guy from Georgia's, you know, goes 1,200 yards this year, White is still the best bet to do that. I do think it's true that it's been a while since we've kind of gone into a season knowing this little about Georgia's running back, and there's obviously still a huge place for Kendall Milton and all those guys. But White's going to get the first crack. He's going to get the first rep with the first team in spring practice, and then we'll see where it kind of goes from there. And there's still plenty of room for running backs, even in a Todd Monken offense. I think that the wider lanes may be an opportunity for a guy like White to thrive. But I have to say, as you alluded to, and I think you and I have talked about this off the air, it has been a while since we've just kind of known this little about Georgia's running back situation.
Right, and Todd Monken's success, at least in college anyway, with running backs. I know the Tampa Bay's 2018 rushing attack, as someone who had a bunch of Tampa Bay running backs then, was just a disaster. Ito Smith and Jalen Richard, 1,000 yards, both his final year at Southern Miss. Joseph Randall, I think over the course of 2 years, if I'm remembering the stats correctly, 2,600 rushing yards, 38 touchdowns. Todd Monken, for as much talk as there's been put out there about, you know, he wants to throw the ball around and they want to throw deep, he still likes running the football and sees great importance in having a running back that can really soften up the defense, sort of pull safeties closer to the line of scrimmage. That way you can attack teams better vertically. And if White is able to soften them up, especially over the course of a game, I think that's going to really open things up for the rest of the Georgia offense.
Let me do a couple kind of off-the-radar things here for a moment. You got a good piece up. Matt Miller, who's a NFL draft analyst that I respect, 7-round mock draft up at Bleacher Report. You did a good job of kind of chronicling all the Georgia guys that are in there. But the name that I did not see was Tyler Clark, the defensive lineman. And this is not me criticizing Clark. I thought that Clark had a really good career at Georgia. Obviously, he was a hero in the Rose Bowl. And I thought that he did a really nice job for UGA this season. But, Connor, from a recruiting standpoint, Georgia needs defensive linemen to get drafted. Now, that's going to start happening pretty soon. You know, Walker's got the look of a draft pick. Obviously, you know, guys like Jalen Carter. The future of this program from a defensive line standpoint seems pretty strong. But, you know, Larry Johnson, Ohio State, constantly putting these guys into the league. What Brent Venables has done at Clemson. This is an area of Georgia's reputation that I think needs to be more fully formed here. Georgia needs to be as good at producing defensive linemen as it has been at some of the other key positions. It's about to have a bunch of offensive linemen go to this year's draft, certainly the indications are. I really am eager to see what the reputation from Georgia from a defensive line standpoint becomes in future years, because when a guy that's a former four-star recruit kind of comes through your program, you want him to leave by getting drafted. And I think that's something that Georgia's got to answer for here coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Clark and sort of the defensive line as a whole is think back to, you know, 2016, Kirby first got here, and who the defensive line coach was in Tracy Rocker. And at the time, there were a lot of high-profile misses in terms of defensive line recruiting. You think Derek Brown, Aubrey Solomon. There are quite a few names that Georgia missed. And Georgia ended up parting ways with Rocker, who is now the defensive line coach at Tennessee, where they're having some trouble, at least if you follow Tennessee recruiting, they're having some trouble landing sort of those elite difference makers along the defensive line. I think, you know, with the bringing of Trey Scott, who, you know, we've asked questions about him from time to time, but as Trayvon Walker goes through the program, I guess Jordan Davis goes through the program.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Jalen Carter coming in this year, I do think, you know, it's going to get there where they're putting in great defensive linemen. It's just, it takes time to get there. And I think back to, we were talking with Theo Johnson at the Under Armour All-American game, and the biggest reason he ended up not coming to Georgia was just because he didn't know how they were going to develop a player of his skill, of his caliber. I think once recruits see that, oh, wait a minute, Trayvon Walker's been developed into being the best player on perhaps the best defense in the country, this is a place for defensive linemen. I think the four, you know, with Clemson and the success they had with Celan Farrell, Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence, I think that's why you're seeing guys like Brian Brzee, DeMonte Capehart, Miles Murphy flock to there, because they put two and two together. Oh, wait a minute. Those guys are really good in college. They get drafted high. Clemson clearly knows what they're doing in that aspect.
And over the last couple of years, I think it's fair to say this has not really hurt Georgia's defensive line recruitment. I think the program's actually recruiting defensive linemen at an incredibly high level right now. You just want to see those results.
Yep.
You want to see this more than just a place that people come to win the Thorpe Award. You want to see front seven guys enjoying some of that same kind of success.
Yeah, and right now, you know, they land Walker last year, five-star. I think he clearly lived up to that billing. They bring in Jalen Carter, who's a top 25 overall prospect. You know, you don't have to go out and necessarily stack the way Clemson has their defensive line class, but if you're bringing in at least one true big difference maker along the defensive line every year, I think that's going to be enough to have a consistent churn, and then eventually one year you are able to sort of convince multiple guys that, hey, we've put a defensive lineman high in the NFL draft, you know, 3-4 years in a row. This is going to be a place where you can come and develop your talents.
So total confession time for me for a moment. The upcoming XFL is not on my radar at all. Like, I can't even really tell you, like, who all the teams are and, like, who has the television package. I don't know much about it at all. I did see the tweet where, like, the Tampa team has announced that Aaron Murray will be the starting quarterback, and obviously this is a marketing gimmick that absolutely works on someone like me. I'm now more interested in it because it's Murray as the quarterback. Some of the other quarterbacks are names that I also kind of recognize as well. So I guess, Connor, and I'm honestly genuinely curious of your answer. You're a huge football fan. I think you're like me. There's this tinge of sadness once the Super Bowl happens because it's kind of the end of football. Are you into the XFL? Do you know much about it? Are you following along? I think Bob Stoops is involved. I couldn't tell you which team he's coaching. Before I saw this tweet, I didn't know which team Aaron Murray was on. You know, what are your feelings about the XFL? Is this on your radar?
Let's just hope the XFL's stint one goes better than last year's. I guess the AAF failed second pro football league. Second, let's hope it goes better than the XFL's first stint, which, for those who don't know...
Well, say what you want. That's your own opinion. I love the first XFL.
It was not financially successful, and I believe folded in year two. I mean,
anything that Vince McMahon's got his hands on, I'm generally a fan of, but I know the point that you're making.
Just, you know, I like you, I love football, perhaps even more so than you. But, you know, teams that... Billionaires, really smart individuals for decades have been trying to come up with... option or second football leagues to sort of counter or go up against the NFL. and all of them have failed. I just think the NFL is such an established brand at this point. Everyone knows what it is, and they sort of know what they're getting there with football. With that brand of football, it's just it's going to be impossible for, I think, a second league to really get a foothold and gain popularity. But, you know, we saw guys this past year who played in the AAF. You know, Younghoe Koo, the kicker for the Falcons, was playing for the Atlanta Legends, and now he's the starting kicker for the Atlanta Falcons if they know what they're doing and decide to keep him. So I think from a player standpoint, it is a good sort of developmental league. But in terms of long-term success or trajectory, I'm not really banking on much from the XFL.
That's very, very interesting. I guess last thing here, this is just more of kind of a pickup type question, but what's on your radar for National Signing Day tomorrow? It certainly seems like, you know, Georgia's about done here. Cedric Von Prahn obviously expected to maintain his commitment. Broderick Jones expected to do the kind of same thing. I'm nostalgic for what National Signing Day in February used to be. Is anything, are you paying attention to anything? I guess McKinley Jackson, does he go to Alabama? Does he go to a place like Texas A&M? That's going to determine whether or not Georgia gets the number one class. But beyond that, is there anything you're interested in for tomorrow?
Yeah, I guess Jeff Santel and I will be at Broderick Jones' announcement in Lithonia High School. But, I mean, other than McKinley Jackson and what he does, likely shaping who ends up with the number one overall class, I can't remember a signing day ever being this dead. I mean, even last year, you know, you had a few high-profile guys, not just in Georgia, but around the country, you know, sort of making their decision. I think, you know, as we continue to go forward with this, I think eventually they're just going to move National Signing Day to one day again, yeah, whether that be February 18th or whenever, or in December. But I just think the idea of having two separate ones is really sort of slow, because what you're seeing now is these elite teams, you know, while some coaches, especially those first year coaches, are trying to cobble up a class there at the end, Georgia's already turned the page to 2021. Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, these elite teams who, you know, the gap between the elite teams, yeah, and the not elite teams is only getting wider. The fact that these programs, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, LSU, are already able to look ahead,
yeah,
to the 2021 recruiting class and get a jump start on that, while a lot of the other programs are trying to finish up in 2020, I think is a real disadvantage for the lower teams in the sport.
I think that's true, and the fact that it's so uninteresting is really a credit to how well Georgia's recruited.
Yes.
Yeah, Georgia has sort of choked the life out of National Signing Day because of the work that it's done up to this point in time. And you mentioned the gap, and we'll kind of finish with this. I think it's amazing, and we joked about this a little bit yesterday. UGA fans certainly had fun with this. The gap that exists between, like, the three big boys right now in recruiting, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, and the rest of the top 10 is what's crazy. For, you know, forget a gap between, like, say, Georgia and Tennessee. Look at top 10 recruiting program right now, like Florida. Huge gap between Georgia and Florida. I'm not just saying that as a Gator hater. Other top 10 classes that you want to point to, numerically on the basis of the 24/7 sports composite, it's amazing how wide that chasm is right now.
Yeah, it's just, it's a massive gap. And even programs like Ohio State and LSU who have good players coming in. But I think the other day I was looking, of the top 60 prospects in the country, 26 of them are going to either Alabama, yeah, Clemson, or Georgia. The rich just continue to get richer, and that's the way it's going to be in this sort of current. Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson have, I think, really figured out how to recruit in this two-signing day era.
That is exactly right. That's Connor Riley. Good stuff. Read him at DogNation.com, and we got plenty more coming up.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff from Connor Riley. Always doing a good job. Really interesting kind of off-season type content. Y'all know I love the off-season stuff. I like hot takes about the upcoming season. I like just the debate. I'm curious to see where these UGA guys are going in the draft. Connor's kind of all over that for you at DogNation.com, so make sure you check that out. Something else you need to check out? My friends at Royal Caribbean. What a great time it is to get away on a Royal Caribbean vacation. There's one thing that Royal Caribbean can offer you that really no one else can. You've heard me talk about Perfect Day Coco Cay, the private oasis right there in the Bahamas. Not a one-size-fits-all type vacation. There's a thrill side. There's a chill side. Perfect Day Coco Cay kind of has all that for you. Whether you want a helium balloon that floats up to 450 feet in the air, or if you want Oasis Lagoon, which is the Caribbean's largest freshwater pool, all kinds of coves kind of hide away in and relax in. You got the thrills, the chills. It's good for family. It's good for couples. It's good for whatever. It's a private island available only to those on Royal Caribbean cruises. So you're going to want to be a part of this. Contact your travel advisor or reach out to my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. You can call them at 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. Let them know you heard about them right here on Dog Nation Daily. So a story we followed now for kind of a while has come to fruition. KJ Costello, the former Stanford quarterback, one of those grad transfers that originally would have been in the mix for Georgia just a bit. One of the ones we initially kind of thought was a potential possibility for UGA anyway. He has made his official announcement. He is going to Mississippi State. We've been addressing this as a possibility for a while. There were a lot of folks in Starkville who thought this was about to happen. We kind of gave you some of those reports, and now it is indeed true. When healthy, Costello has been a very good quarterback. And for as much as I've told you that I don't believe that Mike Leach will be successful at Mississippi State, and I don't, there is no doubt that Leach knows how to get the most and the best out of quarterbacks. He's just really good at that. So I think the job of SEC West coaches just got more difficult. Now, I don't think that Mississippi State's going to beat very many of these teams. I think that Costello may put up huge numbers in a lot of losses. But we talked about this with Connor Riley before. The kind of thing that gives opposing coaches some anxiety, the kind of thing they have to spend extra long meetings kind of dealing with. Leach, working with a quarterback like Costello, may be an example of that. The kind of offense that's going to put up points, the kind of offense that's going to march up and down the field. Will they do anything defensively? Does Leach have the temperament, the personality to handle the pressure cooker that is the SEC? I think the answer to that is no. But he's got himself a capable quarterback. When he had Gardner Minshew, they set records. I think Costello as a talent is probably even better than what Minshew is, even though Minshew is currently an NFL starter. I think this will be a pretty good marriage between Leach and Costello. It won't lead to wins, but it's going to lead to a pile of stats, and certainly it probably makes the SEC West a little bit more interesting. On the other side of the league here for a moment, Greg McElroy talked to a website called The Spun. They asked him who could make an LSU-like jump here in 2020. And McElroy says floor. Let me read you what McElroy tells The Spun. He says probably not a huge surprise here, but I think Florida has a chance to make some serious noise next year. They return a lot of quality pieces from last season, and Dan Mullen is as good as you'll find in college football in maximizing the potential of his teams. They can stay healthy and get a boost in production from their quarterback Kyle Trask. They could be poised to make a playoff rush. So McElroy says that he thinks the Gators are going to make some serious noise next year. I think there'll be plenty of noise coming from Gainesville, but ultimately that sound is going to be the sound of boos. I want to give you a very specific opinion and a very specific prediction. I think Florida's best chance of toppling Georgia in the SEC East was last year, when Georgia's offense, as the ESPN dude said a little earlier in the show, was stuck in the dark ages. I don't think that Georgia offense is going to be stuck in the dark ages anymore, and so now you pair the elite recruiting that Georgia has been doing, and it's circling the globe compared to what Florida's currently doing, but you pair that elite recruiting now with a dynamic game plan, and the gap between Georgia and Florida is only going to get wider. Here's where the specific prediction part of this comes in. Last year, Mullen's key phrase after UGA beat Florida was that the gap between Georgia and Florida was 7 points. That is the line that will be used against Mullen starting the first day of November, which is the day after the cocktail party this year, slated for October 31st. Florida will lose to Georgia by far more than 7 points around this time. There's going to be no shortage of Twitter folks, probably me involved in a little bit of this too, saying, how's that gap between Georgia and Florida now? My guess is that 7 may more look like 17 or more like 27, or you can fill in the blank for yourself. But I think that Greg McElroy, with all due respect, is quite wrong on this one. And then Gators fans are going to be very disappointed with how their team compares to UGA. Now, the rest of the schedule, it's a cakewalk for Florida. It's like a Clemson-style schedule. You may not be able to do much about that. The record may look pretty good by the end of the year, but the cocktail party is going to be hard on those Gators once again. One more thing here as we kind of cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Speaking of Florida, they also show up in that way too early top 25 ESPN list of, hey, what are the big questions facing each of these teams? I thought it was kind of interesting, the look at Florida. You know, you talk about the absence of Grenard and Jabari Zuniga and those guys who've been pass rushers for Florida. How are they going to replace them? And here's where I think recruiting really matters. You know, each and every year, the roster attrition for college football programs is a bit of a stress test. It's the kind of thing that you have to withstand that. You have to have depth that can withstand that. And, you know, we joke all the time about Florida only barely recruiting at a top 10 level. And part of the last couple of years, Florida had a lot of years where it was not in the top 10 at all. First year of Jim McElwain, they finished even outside the top 25. And you know, there's kind of a negative compound interest that sort of occurs over that time where you just don't have the roster strength to match what a program like Georgia does, or even what some other programs around the SEC might be able to do. A team like LSU, for instance, that Florida has to play each and every year. You just don't quite have that. And so I think it is fair to say, not just how much does Kyle Trask develop. Florida's obviously brought in a lot of transfers along the offense side of the ball. That helps them there a little bit. But how about on defense? You know, do they have guys in the program ready to step up and take the next step towards their development? The recruiting rankings would suggest no. A couple other things here real quick. Obviously for LSU, the issue of replacing Joe Burrow and Joe Brady comes up from ESPN. That's certainly fair to say. The Auburn thing is interesting here for a moment because there's no Derrick Brown anymore, no Marlon Davidson anymore. A lot of those big names we've talked about in the Auburn defense, they're now gone. In their place is Kevin Steele, a coordinator now making $2.5 million, something like that, the highest paid coordinator at all of college football. The question has been, is this an elite defensive coordinator when he doesn't have these kinds of elite players in that program? Now, Auburn's still got some guys that are part of the program, but Derrick Brown's been there now for a while. What does the Auburn defense sort of look like without him, and is Kevin still going to be worth the millions of dollars when he doesn't have a guy like that? I actually think that is a fairly fair question to ask. And then finally, on the subject of the Alabama Crimson Tide, the thing that comes up is, courtesy of the ESPN story, and I'll put a link up to this at dognation.com, you know, how do you replace Tua Tagovailoa? But as I've said before, that to me is not the big question facing Alabama. Here is what I think Alabama's going to deal with. Now, obviously, Tua's not going to be there, but Tua wasn't there at the end of the season. What I saw when I looked at Alabama this year was a program that had gone soft, a program that had seemingly forgotten how to run the ball, a program that had seemingly forgotten the defensive DNA that was once the hallmark of the program. And obviously, when you have a chance to be as high-powered offensively as Alabama was, it's a trade that almost anyone would have made. But in Alabama's case, it seems to have been a trade. They sacrificed something to get what they wanted. They became a 50-point-a-game offense, but they weren't exactly the dominant defense they once were. And when needing to run the football, it's almost like Alabama had just completely become a different kind of program. So now Najee Harris is coming back. Does Alabama still know how to use him? Dylan Moses on the defensive side of the ball is coming back. Does Alabama still know how to use him? This linebacker running back, two positions that you just sort of think of when you think of Alabama football, now back, but does Alabama still have a place for them, or has this become kind of a Big 12-type team playing in the SEC? That, for me, is the big question facing Alabama, and we'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Okay, it's a Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of George, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but I mentioned this off the top of the program or near the beginning of the show. I'm sort of fearful that I might be about to give Georgia Tech some of my money. Now, a couple things here for a moment. I have given Tech some money before, at least one or two times. I know back in, like, say, 1997, I bought Tech season tickets to get lower-level tickets for the Georgia-Georgia Tech game that year. I may have done that in other instances. I know I did it in 1997. Many of you have done the same thing. The other thing that you should know about me is before I became, like, sort of like, I guess, dad extraordinaire. I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old. Before I became like just like on daddy duty 24 hours a day, I used to go to a lot of concerts. I used to be a little bit of a music guy. I don't get to go to quite as many anymore, but I may have to go to one this summer, and I may have to give Tech some of my money to do it. Georgia Tech on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, let it be known, they're hosting Guns N' Roses coming up on August 12th at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Now, the sight lines for this probably no better than they are for the typical Tech football game, but the crowd should at least be bigger. Guns N' Roses is like one of the few like rock groups I've never seen that I really want to see. I may have to do this. What if we did like a Dog Nation daily outing to Tech for Guns N' Roses? I wonder if we could get people to want to do that, and I wonder how that would go down. To me, that's just really very interesting to see. I guess the original members, at least a decent number of them, Slash included, along with Axl, that might be something worth paying attention to this summer, coming to Bobby Dodd Stadium. We'll have to see how all that plays out. And yes, I may have to give the Georgia Tech Athletic Association some of my money there for that. So as we wrap up here for a moment, it is National Signing Day tomorrow. I mentioned this before. Amarius Mims was on Twitter a little earlier today, you know, saying he's got an announcement tonight. That's a 2021 offensive lineman. We'll pay attention to him. I'm not even sure what this even is. Half the time, these announcements ends up being about All-American games at the end of their senior year, high school, whatever this, whatever that. But we'll pay attention to that. And really just generally speaking, some interesting developments with the 2021 class, but there is more to be done from 2020. We'll have live coverage tomorrow during Dog Nation Daily of the signature for Broderick Jones, that ink going on that letter of intent. Many of us have been waiting that for a while, and it should become official tomorrow. Same thing for Cedric Von Prahn over there in New Orleans. He'll make it official, and of course we'll have Before the Hedges presented by Kroger at 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon to kind of look at the full day there. So National Signing Day tomorrow, and we'll cover whatever goes on. I'll also tell you this, speaking of those lousy, stinking Gators, 1,193 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.